Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome to this week's Must Hear Music podcast. We are going to get to discussing songs in a moment. Before we do that, I'm going to toss to myself and Ty Comer. We sat down with Kim Gordon. Yes, that is Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth and Body Head. We were incredibly lucky and honored to get to meet her and speak with her and ask her a few questions about her memoir, Girl in the Band, which just came out this week. So let's listen to that right now. Hello, my name is Joe. I'm here on the Must Hear Music podcast. I'm here with Ty Comer. No offense, Ty, that's not as exciting, though. We are both very honored to be sitting here with Kim Gordon, which is just incredible. I don't even know what to say.
I completely concur. My heart is about to beat out of my chest. Kim, thank you for coming by. This is a
Thanks.
Real honor.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we both have been reading your new book, Girl in a Band, which is out this week. So congratulations.
Thanks.
I've got to say that it's a fantastic read. I have missed many subway stops because I've been so engrossed in the book along the way. So many interesting things. And Joe, I know that you've been enjoying it as well.
Yes, it's fantastic. One thing I was wondering, it was just, I think, a really interesting choice that you kind of start the book with what would a lot of people would think is the most dramatic part, like the end of the band. And then you like travel back in time. So kind of why did you begin with that moment?
Well, one thing I think that's what people were most interested in a certain way. I don't get it out of the way.
Right.
But also it's kind of like it kind of situates me where I am now. So It was kind of in a way good to just clear the air with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I felt when I was reading the first chapter, because I honestly wasn't quite sure to the degree that you were going to go into talking about your relationship with Thurston. And, you know, the book opens in a very powerful way, you know, just talking about just, you know, how you were feeling at that last show, both from the perspective of the band ending and your marriage with Thurston ending. And it's just felt like, I mean, I felt the emotional weight of that. And I just thought about what it must have been like for you to actually put those emotions and thoughts on paper. And it must have been, I'm imagining, a really cathartic experience. Is that part of the reason, like, why you did this, to sort of get it all out there?
Well, I hesitate to use the word cathartic. I mean, it was sort of a way... You know, it's sort of a challenge. How do you describe a situation where you actually can't process the feelings in a way? And it was a way, but, you know, writing is a way to make some distance and kind of figure out how you're feeling. Or for me, it's really the only way I really can think about things in a clearer way, I guess.
What point did you decide that you wanted to write this memoir?
I don't know. People started inquiring, you know, different editors. And I guess I sort of, you know, it never occurred to me to write a memoir at this point in my life. But, you know, when something traumatic happens, it makes you realize that things can end, or you can even die at any moment. So sort of like to like get the record straight.
Right.
And one thing we were both kind of caught by is, like, even before you moved to New York and kind of get involved in the art scene, like, there's all these people who you are friends with who end up, like, either being players in the art world or, like, Danny Elfman. Like, it seems like you were just always around a lot of creative people. Is that just like, do you think you gravitate towards that, or like you just happen to be very lucky, or is California just full of a bunch of soon to be famous people, or?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, it's really hard to say. I couldn't, you know, who knows? I'm, you know, I'm probably gravitate towards sort of unconventional people in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that just reading the book, obviously there's a lot of passages about your musical inspirations and how you got to be a part of the band and started playing music. But in addition to talking about music and your relationship, there's sort of like the discussion about your love affair with New York City. And those are actually some of my favorite passages. It just kind of brought me back to the mid-90s when I moved here and sort of the excitement and the promise of, you know, that New York had to offer. And it's interesting talking about how you've seen the city change, places that you used to frequent that are no longer there. What's your relationship with New York City like now? And like when you come back to the city, what are sort of the emotions and thoughts you feel?
Well, you know, it's still really exciting to come into the city. And, you know, just like also driving over the bridge last night or, you know, at dusk, you know, the lights and the buildings and everything. I mean, it's really like just a, you know, it sounds so cliched, but, you know, it is. It was so exciting to see that. And but I don't know, I just feel like as far as the art world goes, it's you know, just super commercial, and it's just so New York to me now is like New York on steroids, you know. It's just so hyper, and I guess I feel a little bit of an outsider coming in and out, that I kind of feel like, you know, it's not inspiring to me to live here right now, but I still get excited and stimulated when I come here.
I like to imagine that a lot of the things that I appreciated about New York in the beginning, and the things that you appreciated, that there's a version of like, I still think that someone who's coming to New York and who has those dreams of being involved in art and sort of like living their life, they're going to find an inspiration. It's just a different version of what
New York's. Yeah, I mean, the city genetically will always be kind of the same. You know, I think cities have that. And I just, I mean, if it wasn't for the weather, I'd be really happy to move back here, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's
freezing right
now. Yeah, the weather is pretty
cool. You know, I love
right
New
now.
York. So. I mean, when I was writing the book, I was kind of like, how can I make this not about myself? So I wanted to make it more of like a portrait of LA in the 60s and 70s and New York in the 80s, 90s more.
One thing that struck me about the book is when you start talking about the Sonic Youth music, it just, I mean, your first albums were, you know, very underground, but then obviously by the time Daydream Nation came around, like you meant a lot to a lot of people and we're starting to make waves, but you kind of don't get that sense in the book that you realize that. Like, at what point did you realize that Sonic Youth was kind of like this cultural force that people really cared about?
Well, I guess, you know, Daydream Nation was sort of a landmark, in that I remember it being like number one in the Paz and Jop poll, which is a kind of a big deal, you know? Mm-hmm. And, so that was, I mean, I think Bad Moon Rising was maybe when that was the first record that people, you know, started paying attention to us. And, like, I think Byron Coley interviewed us for Forced Exposure and put us on the cover. Again, it's like, you know, we're talking still like super underground. but that was super really exciting, you know. We were, like, it was, you know, it was such a slow evolution of, you know, kind of gaining an audience and different opportunities opening up. But there was always kind of frustration with distribution or, you know, getting the records out and that sort of thing.
Is there one song or, I guess, album that kind of stands out for you as, like, the quintessential or, like, the defining moment?
Well, I mean, I guess... Daydream Nation. I mean, Daydream Nation in a bigger way, you know, obviously, that would be the record that I think, you know, everything came together.
I remember, I think it was the 20th anniversary of Daydream Nation, and there was a series of shows that Sonic Youth did where you play the album in its entirety as a four-piece. I remember seeing you play in Williamsburg, and I'd seen you many times before then, but there was something special about that show, just sort of like hearing the complete work, sort of seeing you as a four-piece. That is the moment for me when I think about all the Sonic Youth shows that sort of like, I'm glad that I had a chance to experience that. This might be an impossible question, but sort of like looking at, you talk about a lot of different concerts and experiences that you had while you're in the band. Now that it's over, when you look back, is there one moment, is there a show, is there an experience, or is something that sort of stands out to you as sort of being like, just like a really powerful memory, like one you keep going back to?
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of really, great shows. When we successfully played the Neil Young Bridge concert, Bridge Benefit concert, which we were supposed to play acoustically, and the first time we played, it was a total disaster, and eventually we were invited back. that was kind of powerful and emotional, because I felt like at that point his crew and they were kind of all rooting for us, or like keeping their fingers crossed if we were gonna like implode or what. And I don't even remember what songs we played. I think we played like three songs, and as soon as I came off stage, Paul McCartney was there going, "What tuning is your bass in? And I hear you guys use different tunings, and that's an amazing bass." And I was kind of like all pretty surreal. There were just a lot of really great moments, being on tour in 1991 with Nirvana and getting to see them at that stage every night, amazing shows, and also having Pavement on tour with us in Europe. Like, I just felt like I was getting to see every night, watch their shows, and I was such a huge fan, and I know those are all really fun.
I think that as we're reading the book, it's obvious the perspective that you're writing from. And there's an undercurrent of sadness that's in a lot of the chapters, sort of looking back and sort of realizing that this is sort of an era gone by. There's one chapter that starts off with you saying that it's hard to write about New York, especially from the perspective of, having a broken heart. What was the hardest chapter of the book for you to write?
I mean, that was hard also because just trying to nuts and bolts together the world that is my art practice, and which is such a big part of me that no one knows about, or my music fans or Sonic Youth fans don't necessarily know me as, but it's such a big part of who I am. So that was actually really difficult, not in an emotional way, but just how do I do this, And I don't know. It's hard to process still. Like I didn't write that much about Sonic Youth because one thing I know that someone like Byron Colley is going to write an amazing Sonic Youth book someday. And I didn't want it to be that. But it's also like I'm still very close to those experiences and memories, and it's just kind of still processing it all, really.
And moving forward, so you had the Bodyhead album, which was incredible. Are you working on music right now?
Yeah. I've actually been recording with
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This person, Alex Nost, who lives in Orange County. I know we have sort of a new project. I don't know what it's called yet, but I've been doing that and working on a soundtrack for James Franco movie, Zeroville. And Bill and I'll probably record a album this summer or something.
So the project with Alex Nost in Orange County, is that a duo or like what kind
of... It's a duo. It's another duo.
So looking at the book, I mean, I think that it's something that we all, you know, as fans knew, but I love the fact that you go so deep into starting off in your younger years and how you were got interested in, you know, visual arts and in poetry and in music. And just sort of looking at how art has been such a central focus of your life before Sonic Youth. And it's great to see that, you know, that there are new projects and that's going to continue. And, you know, with art being such a focus of your life, I mean, I sort of, one of the aspects of the book that I love are the photos that are at the beginning of each chapter and sort of, you know, you give like a literal snapshot of where you were at that time and photos that I've never seen before of sort of like the fresh faced girl, you know, who's coming from California, you know, coming to New York, you know, still a bit of like the sparkle and the naivety in your eyes. What?
Younger
co-faded. No, I didn't mean it like that at all. But I guess, you know, the question. As far as part of this, like, you know, ramble is knowing what you know now, the things that you've experienced in the music and your relationship, is there any piece of advice that you wish that you could go back and sort of give to that fresh-faced girl who was coming to New York? Is there one piece of information that you wish that you had back then?
Well, I guess it's like, be careful what you wish for, because you might get it, and then you have to, like, that's your life. No. To kind of persevere and follow the thread of your interest where it leads you. Because, like, I don't, you know, I am mostly concentrating on visual art now, aside from the book.
One thing, speaking about newer music, that I did want to ask. So there's a great part in the book where you talk about sneaking in to watch your daughter play a show. Is that, would you ever, like, consider, like, doing music with your daughter? Or is she just, like, totally wants to be separate from you?
No, I mean, she doesn't actually do music anymore. She goes to the Chicago Art Institute. She's a painter.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that was just a high school fun thing. Yeah.
So that's done. Is there anyone you're listening to these days, like newer bands that you are really into?
I don't know. Like, I kind of, I mean, I tend to discover, like, older music or, you know, mm-hmm. there's this record that I came out a few years ago by a woman, a German woman, who I think she recorded it a while ago, and her son found this cassette in her drawer. And Sybil Bear, I don't know if you know that record. She's, I think she, like, had this relationship with Wim Wenders that ended horribly, and she was kind of suicidal, and somebody invited her on this road trip, and she came back and wrote this record, which is kind of an amazing record. I don't know. And, you know, I like people like Catherine Ribeiro, and I don't know. I do listen to Kurt Vile.
Awesome. Well, some definite things for us to check
yeah,
out,
I'm
and
check
everybody
out.
Should
oh,
yeah, also.
I'm a huge Bardo Pond fan, actually.
Oh yeah, I love okay. Bardo Pond.
Yeah, I love that every record they put out is like a double album. Or something.
plenty of new music.
Well, some great stuff for us to check out. And, you know, obviously everyone who's listening should check out Girl in a Band as well. If you are a Sonic Youth fan, if you are a Kim Gordon fan, this is a must read. Thank you for sharing so much with us both here today and in the book. It's really fantastic to sort of, you know, go through your journey with you in this way. So thanks so much for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. That was Kim Gordon. I'm still giddy off of that. Ty is also really, he was really excited
smiling
about
all day.
That. We were both beaming all day. But enough about us and Kim. Let's talk about some tunes. So we've
some
got,
tunes.
What do we want to start with here? Let's start with a Jason pick.
I'm Jason Lipschitz, by the way.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
This is Erica
Ramirez. I'm sitting here with Jason Lipschitz. And, sorry, I'm still dazzled from Kim Gordon.
That's fine,
like,
man.
I don't care who's around me.
Yeah, we literally mean nothing to Joe. And
especially not today.
Yeah,
so.
Not today. Are we starting with
start
one
with
of
Nate
my picks?
Roos. Yeah.
Nate Roos. Yeah, so Nate Roos of Fun is putting out a solo album, just like Jack Antonoff of Fun did. And he put out his first single earlier this week, I think on Monday, and I really like what I hear. It sounds a lot like Fun. It's kind of has that, like, people who like We Are Young and Some Nights and just the Some Nights album in general are going to like this song a lot. And I think, or maybe not.
I'm sorry. Go
Erica
ahead.
Was just giving some side eye.
I don't think... Here's what I'll say. I don't think it's on the level of a song like We Are Young or Some Nights, but I think it's in that same mold, whereas Jack Antonoff's Bleachers project kind of deviated from what Fun was doing completely in a way that I really appreciated. Nate seems like he's sticking, and obviously it's partially because he's the lead singer of Fun, so
right.
It's going to sound vocally.
It's going to sound like him because
yeah, it's going to say, yeah, hey, yeah. He's not really stepping too far out of what Fun has been doing on their past two albums. And, you know, I think that it's interesting that he decided to go with a solo album instead of saving these songs for the new Fun record, because, and he has a new interview with Rolling Stone where he talks about the fact that some of these songs just, he was in love, and some of these songs are very personal to him. And I give him credit for making that decision. It's a lot tougher than saying, hey, let's get Fun back together, and this is a passion project. Do I think that the song is absolutely incredible? No, probably it's a little bit short of that, but what do you guys think? I'll stop rambling.
Well, I did give you a side eye just because, okay. And I'm glad that you was aware and said that it is like the feel of that album, not necessarily as great as those two songs, because that's just exactly what I wanted to say.
So before I'm going to interrupt you
again,
I want to let the listeners know that Erica, we make fun of you a lot for only listening to like Drake and Adele, Sam Smith and Kanye. I want to let the listeners know that Fun is a band that you like. And the only band
that is
that
not,
you
true.
Like.
Not true.
So
people are not. You need to stop. People are going to stop listening to this podcast. They're not going to see me as a credible person.
Right, more
she
people
listens
listen
to three
to
singers. No, Erica listens to other music. As
I know.
I will say
I tease
band
Erica.
That you were surprised that I liked.
I was very surprised. One day you were like, I really like that band. Fun. And this was before Some Nights really took off the album.
And then just and a couple days ago, you were like, I get it. It was like a year later, and you're like, I get it.
Yeah.
Why you like them. But yes, which is exactly, I like those two
I'm
songs.
I'm sorry. Now I feel bad about saying that. But
you're such a hater.
I
people
know.
Are now, people can
I think it's very funny. I think that's, that running joke is very funny. But go ahead.
No, I mean, that was pretty much what I was going to say. That I feel like it is like, has the feel of that album, but it's not as, you know, catchy as those two singles. But I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's going along with what you saying, with what you were saying. It definitely is more in the mold of Fun. Like Bleachers was very poppy, but kind of more like bedroom pop sounds. And this is like a super epic, like a very theatrical performance. The sound is theatrical. It's arguably overproduced, but I think that's fine. Like I think one of the things I liked about Fun is that they reminded me of Queen at their most, like, kind of ridiculous and pompous. And I think fun, I mean, they don't exactly sound like Queen, but they have that quality, that Freddie Mercury-esque quality. So I'm totally on board with this song. The only thing I don't like is if you're going to kind of go, like, this epic and, like, middle of the road, like, at least come up with a more interesting chorus. Like, Nothing Without Love is just, like, the most, like, bland sentiment.
Oh, come on.
I mean, I don't mean to be a hater,
you
but,
hate
like,
love.
I, well, I hate love. I hate people who are in love. No, I think it's just, it's not terribly interesting. And I'm also saying that because the rest of the lyrics are kind of good. Like, they have, there's this one lyric I wrote down, 3 years at sea after the storm, he's singing. And it's like, Fun and Nate Ruess are such weird artists. Like, how many pop singers out there use, like, seafaring imagery in their works or have a Civil War themed music video? Like, yeah. They're very, like, they have a lot of, like, kind of literary overtones to what they do. So I feel like the lyrics, the chorus should have been better on this because okay. The lyrics are actually pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know if the thing about it, this song, is that it just kind of reminds me of Fun's first album more mm-hmm. than its second album. Aim and Ignite is Fun's first album before they got really famous, and it's a good album, but it's definitely not as ambitious as Some Nights was. And you think about a song like We Are Young with that time change, mm-hmm. Something like that is like really strange in pop music, and I think that's part of the reason why they really took off. And that this song doesn't really have that kind of ambition. It's very, like you said, like epic, and it's like quote unquote stadium size. Mm-hmm. But it's just a little. The chorus is a little more safe than something like a Some Nights.
Totally.
So anyway,
well let's listen to it. Nate Ruess, Nothing Without Love.
3 years at sea after the storm. Come and carry me home, but I got nowhere to go.
All right, that was Nate Ruess, solo member of Fun, Nothing Without Love. Next up, let's talk about an Erica pick. We've got Big Sean featuring Chris Brown and Ty Dolla $ign.
Which I will Plano point out Games. Does not have Drake or Kanye or Adele or Sam Smith on
true.
It.
It's true.
Checkmate.
I'm a big fan of Big Sean's new album, Dark Sky Paradise. I feel like this is his best album to date. It's a moody, kind of dark album, very angsty, very boastful. I feel like he's struggled on being like charismatic and also and relatable as far as what he raps about. So I think that he kind of got it with this album. This song stands out from the rest because it's not as dark as the other ones, and he's not very angry or boastful or talking about ex-bitter lovers. If anything, you know, it's him, Chris Brown, and Ty Dolla $ign on a guy sample with, like, very also, it's just very fun and still catchy lyrics. So I think that kind of shows that he could kind of play both sides very well. I want to know what Jason feels since he has some thoughts on Big Sean.
Yeah, people.
Not to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. It's just I.
Let me know.
People really like this Big Sean album. I get it. I get why people like it. I'm still not a huge fan.
You've
I just
heard
don't.
It all.
I did. I actually listened to it.
Great,
I did listen to the Big Sean album. It wasn't the most enjoyable experience for me.
Wow. Did you like it more than the last one though?
I got to be honest, I did not hear the last one. Okay. I heard his first album, Finally Famous. The name of the second album escapes me right now.
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame? Yeah, sure.
Damn, the hate.
Big Sean seemed like a really nice guy when he was in the office, by the way.
I've talked to him like 3 times. He's super nice, very chill. He has a no Fs mentality going on right now.
No Fs.
I respect it.
Yeah.
He was so friendly when he came in the office.
Super friendly.
I just, like, I didn't even meet him, and he walked by, and he was like, hey, what's up, people? See you later.
Yeah.
On the way out, like, he was just unnecessarily nice.
Yeah, he was very, he was very nice.
Yeah.
And he's in a good space.
No, I have
you
no,
just hate.
I don't hate. I just have to be honest. I just think that what he's doing is not the kind of hip hop that I am personally a fan of.
Right.
I do enjoy I Don't F With You. I don't think anyone.
I want to hear you do the chorus, Jason.
No, I can't do it on the podcast.
Why?
I don't care.
No, no. Right,
today fine. You made a Tyga impersonation.
I did read Tyga lyrics in Tyga's cadence, and I'm not gonna do that on the podcast either.
All right.
Sorry guys.
Can we do it for the Juice podcast? That's
yeah, maybe for the Juice podcast. But I just don't listen. This Big Sean album is going to be very, very successful. I think that it's the biggest one. It's gonna have one of the bigger, you know, release weeks of the year. Probably second only to Drake. I mean, that's just a guess right now. We don't know the numbers right now. But yeah, Big Sean's just really popular and he's really successful in what he's doing. And this song is kind of in the same mold. And I don't F with it. But you go, Joe.
Damn.
I mean, yeah, I don't know how to follow that. But I agree with you that Big Sean is, you know, maybe not technically the greatest rapper out there. But he's kind of won me over with, I guess, just a combination of personality and, like, perseverance. Like, he really cares about hip-hop, and his love comes through in the music, and that is fun to listen to, like, someone who loves what they're doing. So, you know, that being said, I don't know if this is going to be an album that I'm going to spin that many times, but I do like the song a lot. I think it would be a nice follow-up single because it's kind of a different, more melodic, soulful side. The sample, by the way, is from the New Jack Swing group Guy from the late 80s, and that was the group that Teddy Riley was in, the very wonderful singer-songwriter.
Put people on.
And, you know, I would say, really, all I have to say, yeah, I mean, the song it samples is a great song. This is nice. I feel like I'm somewhere between Erica and Jason on this.
It's probably for the best.
Yeah. Exactly. Middle ground. Switzerland. Yeah. But let's listen to it. So this is Big Sean featuring Chris Brown and Ty Dolla $ign, Play No Games.
Okay, I won't deny it. Half the time you send a text, yeah, you know I'm not replying. Just to let you know I'm not one of them niggas you be dodging. I'm the one that you dodge with. I'm the one that you gon' take that dress and save and out the closet. I'm the one you need alone. I'm the one that when you're around your friends that you gotta put on speakerphone.
All right, that was Big Sean. Next up, we're going to do one of my picks. So we're going a little indie on this one. I mean, we had Kim Gordon on the podcast earlier, so
yeah.
So I'm keeping in that vein, going Dan Deacon. His new album is out this week. It's called Gliss Riffer. I picked the first track on the album. It's called Feel the Lightning. I think, first off, I like the album. I really like the song I picked. A lot of people who were introduced to Dan Deacon, you know, maybe 8 years ago, kind of found him because of the a song where he samples Woody Woodpecker. Woody Woodpecker's incredibly irritating laugh kind of looped over and over and over. And, you know, that's the kind of song that gets you notoriety, but it's not the kind of song you want to listen to, like, over and over. What, Jason?
Oh, my God. It's just so funny because, like, I remember I was in college when Dan Deacon's album, the Spider-Man of the Rings,
yes,
came out. And I remember it got like an 8.7 on Pitchfork. And I was like, wow, this album, you know, is getting a lot of great reviews. And I listened to it, and the first song is literally just Woody Woodpecker's like, ha, 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 but like looped like hundreds of times and like stacked on top of each other. I was like, this is a joke. Like, this is not, this is a joke. Like,
but he really is like
that's
a
why
musical
it's
maestro.
It's such a funny memory. Of
it's,
just,
it
like,
is a really funny.
It's just like like imagine being like everybody like, yo, you have to hear this album. You have to hear this.
It was kind of like when Das Racist like made their big splash. It was with Pizza Hut and Taco Bell,
yeah,
which is similarly a really like dumb, repetitive song. But they actually are incredible.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
that was kind of like the first taste of it.
Yeah.
But anyways, anyway, back to Dan Deacon. So since then, he's kind of eased up on the more grating type of, you know,
yes,
like sample-based stuff. His last album was 2012's America, and it was really just kind of like an electronic opera sound almost.
Yeah.
Like, it's recently we talked about Sufjan, and I was saying one of his favorite albums is the BQE instrumental album he did, and that's kind of like the vein Dan Deacon was doing on his last album. This is continuing in that, but a little more song-based. I would just say, you know, the song is like syncopated rhythms at the beginning, but then it kind of moves into a little bit more of a predictable electronic beat. The thing I really like about what he's doing is this very expansive sound, but it's not overproduced. Like, there's a lot of kind of space left in the mix, so it never, like, overwhelms you. And then towards the end, he has kind of voices interweaving with each other, voices singing first-person narratives. So it, in a very slight way, it even reminds me of, like, a Philip Glass kind of, like, minimalist opera. Like, it just, it's this nice combination between indie and, you know, like, a little more of a kind of classical pop sound.
Yeah, I was surprised by how much I like this. And it really, he really has progressed. And I've been, like, vaguely paying attention to Dan Deacon stuff. I've listened to all of his albums, but usually no more than once. And I was surprised. I haven't listened to any of this new album yet before you showed me this. And I was surprised by how melodic it was and how just pleasant it was after the cacophony right. of the Woody Woodpecker era. And he's, you know, he's been gradually moving away from that, but it's still a little surprising. It's just so funny to think about that first album. You know, are you, Joe, a fan of, have you ever heard of the artist Max Tundra?
No.
No? If you like this kind of stuff, this reminded me of electronic artist Max Tundra, who hasn't put out an album since, I think, 2008. Parallax Error Beheads You, but it's in the very, very similar vein to this. Very good stuff. So, yeah.
All right, hey. I'll have to check that out.
There you go.
No, I have to know, Erica, did you listen to this?
I listened to 3 of the 4 minutes and 53 seconds of it.
Hey, that's all
first,
I ask.
The first, that's all you ask? Not the, even the whole song?
No, I wasn't even expecting the first 3 minutes.
It's just pretty good. 3 minutes, I was almost there. Mm-hmm. Jason lied and said that on the last part Adele would appear, and I was still
I almost got it.
I would say that it's not, you know, my cup of tea.
It's your Big Sean.
It's my Big Sean. Yeah. It's, I wouldn't hate on it either. Like, you hated on Big Sean.
I did not hate on Big Sean.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like it. I just don't think it's for me. I guess he is. It is my Big Sean. Yeah.
It's not your cup of tea.
It's not my cup of tea. Yes.
So let's listen to it and see if you think it's your cup of tea. You, I'm addressing the listener now, even though I'm looking directly into Jason's eyes.
Hey, man.
So, but anyways, it's Dan Deacon, Feel the Lightning. Yeah. That was Dan Deacon. Next and last, let's talk about another Jason pick.
Oh, yeah.
Phoebe Ryan. The song is called Mine.
Yeah, so Phoebe Ryan is an artist based in Los Angeles. And it's funny because I heard this song for the first time on Thursday when I got a blast about its music video being out. It's a couple weeks old, but I was, you know, per usual, late on it. But I love this song. It's her debut single. She's a young artist. She's 24, and before Mine, she put out a cover mashup of Miguel's "Do You" and R. Kelly's "Ignition" remix, which is a fun listen. But this is like
we exclusively premiered.
We did exclusively premiere. Indeed, we did.
Shout out
man.
To Billboard.
Shout out to Billboard, the brand. But I just really was captivated with this song. I think it's just so charming and so lyrically strong. That's what really stuck out to me. And it her voice has this kind of airiness that reminds me of Ellie Goulding a lot. And I mean, she's just getting started. She's unsigned. She's playing her first couple shows in New York and LA over the next month and a half. I picked this one because I spoke to her actually on the phone on Friday, and that story is up now on Billboard.com if you want to check it out. She's very lovely, and it's just a song that's been on repeat for me. As soon as it's a one listen kind of song, and that has really beguiled me. What did you think, Joe?
I like beguiled.
Hey-o.
I like that word.
Oh, thanks, guys. You know.
I think one thing I'll say that's interesting, you said it sounds like Ellie Goulding because I'm not going to belabor this stupid comparison, but
I like this.
It reminded me of Lights, not her song Lights, but rather Lights. Like the voice is
I agree with that.
Pretty similar to that. I like this, and I feel like I listened to it, and I was like, I want to hear more from her. I don't know if like this is the song for me. There was something that was a little like regular about it.
Okay.
And one thing I was reading about her on Billboard.com.
Hey-o.
And apparently,
did you read my story?
I didn't. I was reading the exclusive. I'm sorry. I didn't even know. It was no hate.
It came up yesterday.
Out of the entire episode of this podcast, that was the best hate.
Oh my god!
I totally missed it. I'll read it ASAP,
you
Jason.
You searched it on Google and you saw my story from yesterday and another person's story from like a month ago. You're like,
no,
I
happened to edit the story, the other one that went up. Wow. I just missed yours by chance. Nothing personal. But anyway, so she's from apparently Jersey originally.
Yeah, which I didn't know.
And
this is great.
This is going to be a little more like shade. And I really don't mean this too harshly, but it just made sense to me that she would, like, if you're like Jersey and you want to do music, like, why wouldn't you move to New York? It makes sense to me that she chose LA because her sound is a little more polished, a little more middle of the road.
Yeah.
That being said, I feel like there's nothing wrong with that, and I feel like with the right song, she could be great.
Yeah. She's worked with one of her producers, worked on the Tove Lo album, and she's written with Oh Honey, which is like a folk pop group, and B. Miller. She's kind of doing like one of the things she said to me is that she kind of admires someone like Sia, who does a lot of songwriting for other people and while keeping her own stuff intact. So. Yeah, what did you think about this song, Erica?
It's my new like breakup anthem.
Oh, ooh. Is it even a? Yeah, I guess it's a
it
breakup
is,
song,
right?
Not really.
It's like a, you know,
it's like a self-love anthem. I would call it
even
that way.
Better. No, I really like it. I like her. Again, I'm usually like a big fan of big vocals, but I really like hers. It did remind me of Tove Lo. Is that how you say it? I don't want to mess up her name. It did remind me of that as far as like the production goes. And I'm a fan of the songwriting. Yeah, I mean, like, you put me on, so I really want to, like, check out more music from her.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about here.
Maybe you'll send me the Big Sean song.
I'm going to send you all the Big Sean songs. But, yeah, I'm a fan of her.
Cool. Well, let's give it a listen. It's Phoebe Ryan. The song is called Mine.
I know that it's mine no matter what I do.
All right, that was Phoebe Ryan. Before we sign off, I just wanted to give a shout out to Mr. Wives, who stopped by our podcast some time ago to perform their song Reflections for us. Their album is out this week. It's Our Own House.
Oh, yeah.
And Jason just did an interview with them.
They're
lovely people.
They're the best. Yeah, Mandy, the lead singer, is apparently an amazing baker, and I want her to bake me something. Like,
did you talk to your fiance about that?
I'm not baking. Isn't a euphemism for anything?
Bake me food,
I'm so please.
Bake
me food.
No, but I like every time. Like I've spoken to them a couple times, and every time their bandmate, it just comes up that she's an amazing chef. I guess baker, chef. Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of different things.
Yeah. She's a
so
she's an amazing
cable television
baker.
Tells me.
But anyway, that was a completely random
right.
tangent.
Anyways,
but yeah,
Mr. Wives album, great baking, great album.
Yeah,
check it out. That's all we have this week. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.